It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
It is indeed another edition of Rico Bronya. We got a lot to talk about on Friday, June 26th at about, I guess it was 9:45 a.m. The New York Mets did something that they probably should have done, you want to say a few months ago? You want to say a few weeks ago? They fired Carlos Mendoza. What, Pete?
Your mic's not in. Sorry.
Oh, my apologies. Thank you very much for letting me that know.
That's my bad. I made a mistake.
That is your bad.
Yes. Right. Now you sound amazing.
I do appreciate you letting us know, though, because going the entire podcast with my microphone not in wouldn't have been a good idea. But I guess it would have been very fitting of what this season has been, which is a mess. So if the podcast was a mess, like, it is what it is. Anyhow, if you couldn't hear me clearly, welcome to the Rico Bronya. This is the first Rico since the Mets made the decision early Friday morning to fire Carlos Mendoza, something we talked a lot about here on the Rico Bronya, something that I called for many, many times. We will talk about the firing. We will talk about what David Stearns had to say about it. We will talk about the brand new manager, Andy Green. And yes, we are doing this Rico Bronya minutes after the Mets lost their seventh consecutive game, losing 2-1 to Zach Wheeler and the Philadelphia Phillies. So we will certainly have some thoughts on the game. Let's start with Mendoza. I think that you are hearing, and you heard it on the broadcast, and you're hearing it from everybody, how good of a man Carlos Mendoza is. No one's going to deny that. Carlos was always good to the Rico. He came on numerous times, including coming to Fanatics Fest in the middle of a series against the Phillies a year ago, which he took some heat for. So, yeah, I'll join in on echoing that Mendy is a good dude. Unfortunately, in sports, it's a results business. It's not about being a good dude. And this is a Met team that has had a bad season, a season that I think is going to live kind of historically in the annals of Met history. I'm sure we'll do off-season Rico's breaking that down. This has not been all his fault. He has contributed to it, though. I don't think his managing has been great this year, as we've talked about throughout this season. But I think when you're having a bad year, and you're also coming off of a year that was a collapse, which is exactly what last year was, the manager is going to be on the hot seat, and sometimes you're going to try to spark a team by firing a manager. I go all the way back to April 20th. I think that was their 11th consecutive loss, where I was ready to try something. I was ready to say, let's fire the manager. Let's see. Let's see if Andy Green or Kai Correa or Dick Scott can spark the team. The Mets refused to do that. And so my reaction on Friday morning, when I heard the news that Mendy was gone, my very first reaction was, why now? Was, why do you wait until the season is clearly over? Because this season is over. I don't think anyone's going to deny that anymore. Why would you wait until it's too late to try something? It's odd to me. And I came to the conclusion, and this is not me reporting because I'm not a reporter. This is me speculating. It's educated speculation, if you will. But my gut was, this wasn't a David Stearns decision. This was a Steve Cohen decision. I watched David Stearns' press conference. We are not going to play his clips today. Nobody needs to hear it. And I came to the same conclusion. I feel even more confident that this is not something David Stearns wanted to do. I thought David Stearns was going to cry during the press conference, and I'm not mocking him for that. It clearly shows he had a great respect for Carlos Mendoza. He liked working with Carlos Mendoza. And I asked on my radio show, Evan and Tiki, if you listened to it, where I did get to instantly react to the Mendy firing. This is now 12 hours later. But I said, why was David Stearns so steadfast a month and a half ago to not fire him, and now he's doing it? And I think the answer is, he didn't want to fire Carlos Mendoza. That's the impression I got from David Stearns' press conference to his actions to his emotions. This felt like an owner who is pissed off, and he has every right to be, who said, you got to do something. We got swept of four games by the Chicago Cubs. The crowd is chanting for a player that's not even on this team. Like, you have to do something, whether it's Mendy's fault or not. So I don't want to spend that much more time on this, because honestly, I feel like we've spent so much time on the Rico breaking down Carlos Mendoza and his moves and his bad moves. And if they should fire him, they should have fired him. They should have fired him 2 months ago. Not because he's a bad manager, not because he can't become a good manager somewhere else, not because he's a bad guy, and certainly not because this is mostly his fault, because it's not mostly his fault. We all know that. It is the players, and more importantly, it's the guy who picked the players. So my reaction is this should have been done a month and a half ago when there was still a chance to salvage this season. This season is unsalvageable. And that is not me blowing a gasket and being over emotional. That's the reality. The reality is we're 82 games into this season. They've lost their seventh straight game. I say that laughing because it's so bad. They're 14 games under 500. They're not good. And most of us have known they aren't good since probably late April. The tenure of Carlos Mendoza is going to be a fascinating one, though. Because, and I don't expect you guys, the Ricoers out there, to feel this way right now, because I think where you're still pissed about this season and still mad about everything that has transpired and maybe even mad at Carlos Mendoza for some of his managing. But I think when we talk about Carlos Mendoza a year from now or 5 years from now or 10 years from now, he's not going to live in Met history like some kind of bad thought. He's not Art Howe. He's not Mickey Callaway. He's not Luis Rojas. Carlos Mendoza had good moments here. He was the manager of a team that gave us a lot of joy in 2024, and he did a great job and deserves credit for the way that team got off to a bad start, featured some horribly embarrassing moments. Jorge Lopez is throwing a glove in the stands, and they turned it around and had a great year and made the playoffs in game 161 and got to the NLCS. Like, we all know the story. And Carlos Mendoza, I know for me, will live in a good place in Met history. You may not feel that way today. You may not feel that way tomorrow. But I do think when we talk about all the managers that we witnessed and watched, I think that Carlos Mendoza will be a guy that we view as slightly positive. That's how I would view it. But for now, the Mets needed to do something. This is a season that spiraled out of control. And I think that once you realize he's not going to come back in 2027 and there's nothing he could do to save his job now, then why would you hold on to him? It's almost cruel and unusual punishment. So my reaction continues to be, yes, they were right to fire Mendy. They should have done this 2 months ago. Andy Green was a predictable option. We've talked about Andy Green a lot. Tiki gave me a golf clap on Evan and Tiki because I said back in January, I think it was when Kai Correa got the bench coach job, and everyone assumed, oh, he's the next manager. I reminded people, he's not the next manager. It's probably Andy Green, only just because of his resume. He had managed before. He was in the front office. He seemed like the logical answer if they decided to make a midseason move. But it's kind of a reminder, and it goes back to what I said about Stearns. When the Phillies hired Don Mattingly, they probably knew in the back of their minds he is the next manager if something happens to Rob Thompson. If we get off to a bad start, Donnie's the guy. I don't think the Mets did that at all with Kai Correa. Like, they literally hired him because they thought he was going to have a big hand in improving the defense of this team. They didn't hire Kai Correa with an eye on him replacing Mendoza because I genuinely think David Stearns had no plans to ever replace Carlos Mendoza. And I don't think Andy Green was ever brought in as a guy to replace Carlos Mendoza. He was just brought in because they thought he'd be good at the job he had in player development. So this is a team, and I think you can see it by who is employed and the actions, that never had an intention of firing Carlos Mendoza, which is why I don't think David Stearns was the one to do it. And he was even asked at the press conference, was it you or was it Steve? And instead of answering the question directly, he said, I'm not going to talk about that. I'm not going to get into the details of the conversation that me and Steve had. The conclusion I'm going to jump to is that the owner finally said, I got to do something. I got angry customers. I'm pissed off. I'm angry. And we got to do something. And yes, the something is the manager. I thought, and I said this on the radio, so I'll say it here, that Andy Green would have a chance to keep this job. But what we've learned about Andy over the last few hours, including in his press conference, is that he doesn't want the job, that he turned down interviews for managerial jobs. Not that he was guaranteed to ever get it, but he was certainly going to be in that list of guys that gets job interviews and maybe gets a second chance. Remember, he managed San Diego years ago. Wasn't great, but had a good reputation around baseball where he was going to get interviews. And Andy Green said, I don't want to do it. I want to take my daughter to Broadway shows. I don't want to be a manager. And David Stearns at his press conference even said that Andy Green is not a candidate. I repeat, not a candidate to keep the job full time. I said on the radio that I think Andy Green would have an opportunity to keep the job full time. And it's an interesting discussion. What would he need to do for us as Met fans to say, just give him the job? I remember having that discussion about Mike Kafka when he took over for Brian Daboll. And we all agreed it was a long shot, but hey, what would he need to do? Let's just at least put it out on the table, as unlikely as it is. It does sound with Andy Green that even if the Mets played great baseball, no shot that's happening, but even if the Mets surge their way back into some semblance of a playoff race, that Andy Green doesn't want the job. Now, I always hearken back to the late Dick Cheney, that George Bush, Governor Bush, asked Dick Cheney to head his committee to search for a running mate. And at the end of the day, George Bush said, I just want you to be my running mate. And Dick Cheney finally said, okay. So is it possible that Andy Green gets Cheney'd? Sure. But I think the only way that happens is if the Mets win a lot of games, is if you see a great jump in success, if you see the development of young players. Now, I'll mix in a little bit of game one of this series against the Phillies. They did lose 2-1. The offense did absolutely nothing as they got shut down by Zach Wheeler. And we featured that very odd ninth inning, which I'll get to. But we did see a major positive. There is something that you can take out of Friday night's loss to the Phillies, and that Zach Thornton throwing six innings and allowing one run, especially with the way that game started. If Zach Thornton is establishing himself in this rotation, if some of the young players, let's say Ronnie Mauricio, who's going to get an opportunity, plays well, and yes, the Mets mix in some victories, I could see myself and some of you guys, not the majority, saying, why not Andy Green? He's got managerial experience. Why not him? Now, again, I think we're a long ways away from that. I am not predicting that, but I could see that scenario. And if that happened, I could see David Stearns trying to convince Andy Green, just take the job. I know you don't want it, but you just did it for a few months. You drank the sweet nectar of it. So I would not rule out Andy Green as a possibility, depending on the results of this season. But naturally, and we will have a lot of time to go really in depth on this, but naturally we start to think, well, okay, who's it going to be? Who is the Met manager going to be in 2027? And I give Sean Morash a lot of credit. Sean is on our show, Evan and Tiki, with Sean Morash. And we were all making like our predictions, our very early on predictions on who the next Met manager would be. And Tiki went the route of Carlos Beltran. I talked up the possibility of Andy Green keeping this job. And Sean, before any report, before any comment was made, brought up the link to Albert Pujols. My view on Albert Pujols is this, all right? Number one, we need to take away what he is as a player because it's irrelevant. Like, it does not matter. Is he the greatest right-hand hitter I've ever seen? He's up there. But I have concerns about Albert Pujols, and it has nothing to do with what I think of him as a player or how I felt about him in 2006 when we were battling him in the National League Championship Series. Number one, Albert Pujols, can you handle the New York media? Because I remember as a player in 2006, you were, excuse my French, a dick to the New York media. Part of this job is communicating with your fans and everyone who asks you a million questions. Can Albert Pujols handle that? That's number one. Number two, do we want another manager with no experience? His experience is the WBC. I get it. It's something. It is not managing the grind of a 162-game season. This is a franchise that over the last decade has done a lot of the non-experience. Luis Rojas, Carlos Mendoza, Mickey Callaway. It's been a lot of it. Willie Randolph, if you want to go back to 2005. Do we want to go that route? And the other thought is, well, he has a good relationship with Juan Soto. What does that even mean? This is not the NBA. Like, does the relationship with Juan Soto matter? The Mets are not recruiting Juan Soto. He signed a contract for 1 million years. His opt-out can be overridden. You don't need to keep Juan Soto happy. You need to have someone in that room who can maximize the talent, handle a bullpen, communicate with the media. That's a big part of the job. Those are the factors in this job, and I'm not convinced Albert Pujols can do any of that. So I'm not enamored by him. Now, Carlos Beltran is similar in that he doesn't have a managerial job, and I acknowledge that. That is one of the concerns about Carlos. I think the appeal of Carlos Beltran, and I admit this is a part of it for me, is the unfinished business aspect of him. He got the job. Like, we were ready for Carlos Beltran to be the manager of the New York Mets. It was a done deal. He was hired. He had a press conference. It was happening. And then it didn't. By the way, Hoff, I don't know if Pete's on the air right yet because he's going to be doing the overnight show on WFAN. So, Pete, if you're still available to talk, pop in. If not, it's not a big deal. I was going to ask him something about the guy who hired Carlos Beltran, and that is Brody Van Wagenen, because I heard Craig say on the air, Hoff tried to get Brody to come on Craig's show to talk about Mendy, and Brody politely declined, which totally understanding. I was kind of curious, would Brody do any interviews about the Mets, or does he not talk about his time? Because that's a Rico guest right there. You know, forget putting him on the Fan to talk about Mendoza. Screw that. Like, I want to break down his entire tenure here. Because there's some good and there's some bad. And sometimes when you're out of the business, because he's not in the GM business at least, he's back in the agent business, you can probably be really reflective on the good and the bad that happened. But more than anything, the reason I'd be curious to talk about Brody, or to Brody, he hired Beltran. He was the one who made the decision, let's see what Carlos Beltran can do as the New York Mets manager. So you're going to hear a lot about Carlos. And yeah, the negative that you have is the same negative that Pujols has. He's never managed before. Alex Cora, I think, should be on the top of every list. He is a World Series winning manager. He's young. He doesn't take any crap. He's got I mean, Alex Cora, honestly, has everything. Like, I don't know what negative you would draw other than just trying to go through his Red Sox tenure and say, well, they cheated in 2018 and they underachieved this year, or whatever crap you want to come up with. He is one of the best managers available and would top all of our lists in terms of candidates. But we'll have a lot of time to do this. We'll have a lot of time to break it down. We'll have a lot of time to kind of digest things. Let me get back to David Stearns, and then we'll talk a little bit about this game, and I'll read some of your emails to ricob@gmail.com. I thought David Stearns tried to be remorseful. I think he tried to say, hey, this is on me, because he did say that a couple of times. Now, I think he has a very difficult time connecting with Met fans because he comes across a little bit unrelatable to a lot of Met fans. But I do think he tried, and I think he tried to own this, which he should. I mean, you are the president of baseball operations, and as he said, everything goes through my desk. But he said something. He said something that I've even said, but I understand why it annoys you, and it even annoyed me when he said it. So Mike Puma, and kudos to Puma, did the dog question. And what I mean by the dog question is many years ago, Mike Milbury was a guest on Mike and the Mad Dog, and Chris Russo says to Mike Milbury, how do you still have a job? And it was blunt and it was hilarious. Mike Puma says to David Stearns, if you're a partnership with Mendy, have you considered resigning? Have you considered, hey, we're partners and he's gone, I'll join him in leaving? And David Stearns very quickly said no. Very dismissive of that idea. And said he has the full faith of the organization and that Steve Cohen believes in him. And one reporter even said, how do you know that? And he said, well, I talk to Steve Cohen every day. But one thing David Stearns said is, you don't see everything that we're doing. You see the wins and losses, and yes, we're judged by that, but you're not seeing the other stuff. And I'm not doubting that the other stuff doesn't exist. Of course it does. There's more to a baseball team than simply the free agents you sign and the trades you make. You're ultimately going to be judged by wins and losses, But some of the things that will eventually contribute to wins and losses is developing talent, drafting guys, infrastructure. I get all that. But when you say that, when you tell your fans, because that's what press conferences are for, they're not for Mike Puma, they're for us as fans, you're basically saying, don't believe what you see. It's not raining, or it's not pee on your head. It's rain, or whatever the phrasing is. That's an idiot with idiom. So even if you are doing so many great things in the infrastructure of the organization, eventually we need to see it. It's not me telling you it isn't true. It's me saying, we got to see it. This is a wins and losses business, man. You got to win. And this is a team that's on pace to have one of those worst seasons it's had since 1993. I mean, this could be a 100-loss team. It is on the table that they lose 100 games. That's amazing to me. That's incredible for all of us. Even a 90-loss season is nuts. So no matter what you tell us about the farm system or the infrastructure or all the things you're doing really well, the results on the field matter. And they're really, really bad. So I think David Stearns tried to die on the sword, tried to say this is on me. And he did say that, but we'll also weave in, you guys don't see all the great stuff we're doing. I think it's important for Steve Cohen to talk. Steve Cohen's ownership right now in running the New York Mets, it's been very, very mixed. The results are bad. I don't think there's any denying that. I will give you what I love about Steve Cohen, and then I'll also rip him, because I think sometimes we struggle to do both. It's like one or the other. Either he's just a horrible gremlin of an owner, and I miss the Wilpons, or he's the greatest thing ever. Don't rip him. I can't view things that way. There's good and there's bad. The good of Steve Cohen is that he spends. The good of Steve Cohen, as much as some Met fans don't agree with this, is that I do think he cares. This idea, and it gets repeated all the time, whether it's callers to WFN. I know Joe feels this way, and I love Joe B, but I disagree with him. The idea that Steve Cohen just bought the Mets to build a casino and he doesn't care about the team, that's not backed up by the reality of the payroll. It's not backed up by what he's done to try to get this team to win. So I appreciate that Steve Cohen spends a lot of money. I do. I will never want to go back to the Wilpons. Anyone who says, I miss the Wilpons, they're either saying it to get attention or they're an idiot. There's no in between, right? So I appreciate the spending. I appreciate that he wants to win. But this is a results business. It's like I said before about Stearns. In 2021, the team was sort of good, collapsed at the end, and made an all-time bad trade. No matter what you think in the moment, Javier Baez for Pete Crow Armstrong is an all-time bad trade. Don't tell me about the process. Don't tell me that Baez was good for a few weeks. I know. I watched it. That is an all-time bad trade. That's under the stewardship of this owner, in which, again, he hired Sandy Alderson, Jared Porter, and Zach Scott. And you could tell me all day, well, Jared Porter sent penis pictures. He didn't know that. He still hired him. Zach Scott had a DUI he didn't tell his bosses about. Okay, you hired him. You don't have to give me the details. I know the details. Alderson, Porter, Scott, here comes Billy Epler. They have a great 2022, in which the story of 2022 is that at the trade deadline, they basically run the ball instead of going for it. And again, I'm not saying all this is on Cohen. Obviously, it's not, but he's the owner. It's like the president of baseball operations. It's all on you, right? I'm just telling you his tenure. So 2022 is a great season. They won 100 games. It was unbelievable. They ran the football at the trade deadline, and they flamed out in the postseason. 2023 was an all-time embarrassing year. Well, at least I thought it was until 2026. I appreciated that Steve Cohen paid off the salaries of Verlander and Scherzer to get better prospects. But again, the results are the results. They were awful with a monstrous payroll. 2024 was like a miracle. It was bad for the first few months and then turned into one of the most fun seasons I've ever had as a fan. But I remember on the Rico when it all ended saying, hey, I know it was a fun season and maybe someday I'll appreciate it, but they missed an opportunity. I couldn't have been more right about missing an opportunity. Never tell me, don't worry, we'll be back. Because I've had it said to me my entire life and you've all been wrong. You don't know if you'll be back. Oh, don't worry that KD's foot on the line. We'll be back. No, we weren't. Don't worry that Beltran looked at strike three. We'll be back. No, we weren't. Don't worry that the Dodgers dog walked you in the NLCS. We'll be back. No, we haven't. And then obviously 2025 is an all-time disaster in terms of how they started and how it finished. And then 2026, an offseason met with controversial decisions. And then this happens. 1992 on steroids. So it's not a great tenure. Is it all his fault? It's not all his fault, but you're the owner. The buck stops with you. And when you come out and speak or tweet when Bo Bichette gets a big hit in April, and you come out and tweets about the green lawns you're watching as they get in their ass kicked by the Dodgers, then you probably should show up when you fire your manager. And you probably should show up when the team is in the midst of its worst season in the last 30 years. Anyhow, should we talk about this game? A little bit about this baseball game, game one of the three-game series against the Phillies, because the Rico will continue to talk Mets baseball. We will mix in the managers and who they should hire and all this off-the-field stuff, but we're going to break down these games. So give me 5 minutes on game one of this series. Number one, Zach Thornton. I got to give him a lot of credit. So Zach comes up to make this start because the Mets make the decision to move on from David Peterson. We're all good with that. And he is five pitches into this game, and he gives up a booming double to Trey Turner that I thought was a home run and just missed first pitch of the game. On the fourth pitch of the game, he gives up a rocket ship base hit to Kyle Schwarber. And then two pitches in, Bryce Harper pounds a base hit up the middle. It's 1-0 Phillies, and there's two on and nobody out, and he's behind Alec Bohm. This felt as if the Nick Green era was going to begin, or Andy Green era. I get Nick Green confused. I'm so sorry. I'm going to do this a lot. I'm going to call Andy Green Nick Green because the Yankees had a middle infielder named Nick Green, and John Sterling screamed at the top of his lungs, "It isn't easy being green." So my apologies. But in that top of the first inning, did you not think the Andy Green era was going to begin with like a 15-0 loss, that the Phillies were just picking up where they left off from what happened in Philadelphia? But not only did Zach Thornton settle down, but Jared Young morphed into Rico Bronya at first base. He made that great diving play against Brandon Marsh that saved a run, if not two. He also had the great defensive play. When was it? I have to write it down somewhere in my scorebook. In the seventh inning, the double play that he turned. That could have been a crooked number after the Phillies took the lead. But back to Zach Thornton. The way he got out of the first inning, yes, helped out by the Young play, the two strikeouts, the 1-2-3 second, the way he danced through the issues in the third inning when Brett Beatty made the low throw, and I guess I will rip Jared Young for one thing, he should have scooped that ball out. I'll critique him a little bit for that. But really, a solid performance by Zach Thornton. He pitched incredibly well, and I think that that's the kind of stuff we now look for in this loss season. We look for the young guys. And so Zach has clearly earned another start. Gets through that third inning after the error in the walk, helped out by the Jared Young double play. Dances around the two-out double in the fourth inning. Pitches a 1-2-3 fifth. Gets another double play in the sixth inning. I had no problem with Andy Green taking him out. The pitch count was low, but you're talking about a young pitcher that just pitched his ass off. And you have faith in your bullpen. And that's where things turned. Waskar Brazoban really, for the first time, failed us. And some of it was bad luck. Like, he gives up the infield hit to Derek Hill, in which I have no idea why Brett Beatty wasn't trying to make the throw. He makes the diving stop. Get up and try to throw him out. Maybe he's got so little confidence in his arm or Jared Young's ability to scoop it. But the killer, and this is where this loss would have been, and maybe I'll write it down anyway, as one of those horrible losses this season. Because think about how they lost this game 2-1. Let me continue with Brazoban, and then we'll dance around all the different things that would normally cause you pain. You're ahead of Trey Turner, 1-2, who just swung through a fastball, and you hang a slider in the middle of the plate that Turner bangs in a left field for the hit that gave the Phillies the lead. So that sucked. Go back to the bottom of the first inning. Juan Soto hits a ball that should be a two-run home run. The Mets should be up 2-1 in the bottom of the first inning, and Derek Hill makes this just all-time unbelievable catch, running into deep right center field, leaping into the air. I mean, just you tip your hat. There's nothing you could say. But it sucked. I mean, that's true. So you mix in Derek Hill's great catch. You mix in Brazoban giving up a hit, and he's been good all year long, so it's tough to kill him, ahead of Trey Turner hanging a slider. You throw in the fact that in the ninth inning, you get a base hit by Lindor that's called a foul ball, and then when it's overturned, they only give him one base. And then Jared Young strikes out on a borderline 3-2 pitch, and they lose this game in which they manage one run. Zach Wheeler was awesome. The one run they got almost felt lucky. The leadoff double by Bo Bichette, and then Jared Young came through with the RBI single after Lindor moved him to third base. It was just they could not figure out Wheeler. They could not figure out Kirkering. And obviously, Johan Duran is excellent, and they couldn't figure him out. But this would have been normally a really, really bad loss. A very bad loss. But I think we're like comatose. That's the answer. They're 14 games under 500. You basically know the season is over. But I think where we're at, and this is where I'm at, and we'll continue to talk about this on future Ricos, is it's evaluating the young players. Ronnie Mauricio had a lifeless 0-for-3. Ronnie Mauricio needs to just play every single day. Zach Thornton earned another start in this rotation. Christian Scott's obviously going to be in this rotation as he takes the baseball on Saturday. Nolan McClain takes the baseball every 5 days. And you hope to see development from these guys. It's crazy that that's where we're at before the 4th of July, but that's where we're at. Let me read some of your emails and then we'll skedaddle. TheRicoB@gmail.com. That's the email address, TheRicoB@gmail.com. Let's go to Coach Rube. Coach Rube writes, why Mendoza might have been overrated. So Mendoza in 24 had Iglesias and JD Martinez as player managers, basically. Those two players were a huge reason for the chemistry and success of the 24 Mets, in my opinion. Mendoza had his part for sure, but without those two, it's debatable to say we have this epic run. With that being said, here's a hypothetical situation. If the Mets had re-signed Iglesias and JD Martinez before the 2025 season, do the Mets make the playoffs? My answer is no. Like, I get your point about their leadership and what they added in 2024. I think 2024, which is such an anomaly now when you think about where this franchise is and you think about the Steve Cohen era in general, I think a lot of it was magic. And a lot of it was incredible performances from starting pitchers on short-term deals. Like, Sean Manaea was amazing. Luis Severino was amazing. Jose Quintana was really good. David Peterson was really good down the stretch. Let's not forget that it was more than just leadership and a song. Like, they pitched their asses off, and they haven't been close to pitching to that level since. Adam writes, Evan, David Stearns does not deserve to be fired. We talk about accountability. Well, in my opinion, firing him just leaves a horrible mess for someone else to clean up. No, this is his mess, and he needs to fix it. The complete failure is not just his fault, it's also his problem. And I don't know about you, but I hate cleaning up after other people's messes. His punishment is to stay with this team and be forced to see the damage he's done. Like a dog who crapped on the rug. Clean up after yourself. This is no longer an opportunity, it's now a responsibility. I don't have faith in him, but I'll tell you this. In my life, I've seen people come back from devastation, and it supplied them with a rude awakening to catapult them into success. One more year for Stearns to fix this disaster, so no poor soul has to inherit it. That's a good thought. Yeah, I am very critical of David Stearns, but I am not ready to fire him. I've given this reason before. I'll give it again. I know a lot of people don't like it. That's okay. I think that firing a team president after 3 seasons is dysfunction. Like, that is not a functioning organization. A team president needs time. And as much as I don't necessarily want to hear about that or hear about the infrastructure he's building like I talked about. When we get to the level of firing him, I'm not there. And what I ask everybody is, all right, you fired him. Now who are you hiring? Theo Epstein's not walking through that door, so please stop saying him. It's probably just some other executive that you have no idea what they're going to be. Jack writes, hi, Evan. If Andy Green is not going to be the manager next season, why not just start looking for the new permanent manager now? I think you can. I think with Andy Green publicly saying, I don't want to do this, and I've turned this down, I think it takes away any kind of awkwardness of the Mets openly interviewing and talking to managers. I know that's unorthodox, but it's a great point, Jack. Like, the Phillies are trying to make the playoffs. Don Mattingly would like to keep the job. You're not going to openly talk to other people, but Andy Green is a caretaker. That's essentially how they defined him. So, Albert Pujols, you want to talk to him now? Why not? You want to reach out to Alex Cora and have conversations now? Why not? I don't think you're going to do anything about it, but I do understand your point that this is unique, you know, because other interim managers are trying to keep the job. Jerry Manuel was an interim manager, and he kept the job. You know, when the Mets have made in-season managerial changes, whether it was Bobby Valentine taking over for Dallas Green, or it was Dallas Green taking over for Jeff Torberg, or it was Bud Harrelson taking over for Davey Johnson, I'm going through a few of them in my lifetime. They wanted the job, and they kept the job. This is very different with Andy Green. Very, very different. We appreciate you listening to this, Rico. We'll call it the Mets fired Carlos Mendoza and they lost again edition of the Rico. If you're new to this podcast, every time a series ends, like Sunday, we'll always have a podcast right after. We'll be doing that one from Niagara Falls. Hopefully I'll get you a good view after this Philly series is wrapped up. And we always pop up these instant reactions or reactions to breaking news. So make sure you subscribe to the Rico Bronya and you'll never miss an episode. Yes, Pete?
Just quickly before we wrap up, if you guys are tuning live, I'm going to be on air live in about 5 or so minutes on WFAN. So if you want to keep the conversation going, call in, whatever. Hit me up at 888-808-1019.
So I said this earlier in the pod. I'm going to ask you live here on the Rico. I heard Craig say earlier today that you reached out to Brody Van Wagenen about coming on to talk about Carlos Mendoza, and he politely declined. Makes sense. I don't know what he would say about Mendoza. Is Brody open to talking about his Met tenure at all? Because I'd love to do a Rico with him, not even just going through everything that he experienced in the few years he was here.
He left me a very nice voicemail and said today wasn't the day to talk, but love to do it another day.
Yeah, because looking at the past is interesting, especially because he hired Beltran. Like, he fired Beltran, but he hired Beltran. So, for a future Rico, I'd love to talk to Brody. I think he'd be a fascinating guy to break down the two-year history he had here. Was that what it was, 2 years? I think so.
It was a quick 2 years. What did he say? Come get some? What was his quote?
We're going to fill it to the top, I think is what he said.
No, when he, I forgot what signing he got, Jed Lowry. What was his Jed Lowry quote?
Well, the quote that I'll never forget, and this is where Brody, I don't know if he has a sense of humor, and I don't know where he's at with his tenure, because he did some good things. Like, the Edwin Diaz trade was a great trade, but he did a lot of bad things. The quote that sticks with me was what he said about Zach Wheeler, because Zach Wheeler signing with the Phillies is one of the worst free agent defections in the history of the franchise. It doesn't get the attention of Alonso or the attention of DeGrom or the attention of Darryl Strawberry. I'm telling you right now, and we're going to do a whole Rico about this, even though we sort of did one last year. Zach Wheeler leaving is one of the worst things in the history of this Met franchise. And Brody's comment was, we got you paid, you're welcome. And it's like, what?
Woo! Yeah, listen, I just remember Brody was known for a lot of quotes, and too many in a short period of time when they won nothing.
Yes, 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 indeed. No doubt about it. Well, check out Pete Hoffman on WFAN. Make sure you subscribe to the Rico. We'll be back after this Philly series is over. Thank you for hanging out with us on another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.